Good evening. It is Intuitive Soul Radio with your host, Lori Houston, Intuitive Soul, clearing a path to divine consciousness. And tonight, as I always love, we have a guest in the studio, and one of my favorite guests is David Watson. David Watson is a channeler of the Willows. He also does a lot of different therapies, and tonight we're actually going to talk a little bit more about some of the things that he can help us with as we're going through these challenging times that everybody seems to be going through. So welcome to the show, and welcome, David.
Well, thanks, Laurie. I'd like to also qualify at this moment in time that I also take therapies as well as do therapies with other people. So it's we try to keep balance that way, too, you know.
There you go.
Yeah. So I think tonight we were going to talk a little bit about, stress and the world that we're dealing with these days. And I don't know. Everybody has a little something that stresses them here and there, there and here. And
that's
right. And the kind of things that that stress us are different for each and every one of us. Each person has different things that affect them in different ways, depending on the beliefs they've developed in a lifetime. And it's those beliefs that really keep us stressed, keep us in the spot that we don't want to be in, because we have trouble getting around them. Okay? And a lot of people think that stress is something that happens to us. It's actually something that happens through us and creates a little bit of anxiety along the way. So that's how we know we got it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things I've been specializing in the last few years is I call myself a stress counselor.
Right.
You know? That's right. You know, I know there's a lot of stressed counselors out there too, but being a stress counselor, we have an opportunity, instead of trying to help people manage their stress, you know, it's kind of like, I don't know, trying to, oh, goodness me.
And David's forgot to turn off his phone.
Look at that. We have people calling already before I even have a chance to
say
anything on the phone or on the air. So we'll just get through this stressful moment here and see how things just come right along. This is called stress therapy in action. However, let's get back to the idea of stress itself. So as I was saying, when we are feeling stressed, we have a tendency to go into an altered state of consciousness, one that creates a lot of anxiety within us, stops us from thinking clearly, and basically begins to hold us back in our lives from doing the things we want to really do. And as I said before, stress can come from any different quarter. It can come from our work, from a relationship. Sometimes it can just come with from sitting and listening to the radio or listening or watching television or listening to the news. That's a real good stressor.
Mm.
And the unusual thing about stress and the interesting thing about it is most of the things we ever get stressed about never happen. I'd say probably most of us would say like 95% of the things that were affecting us in life in the moment actually never come into being. So we're really like, you know, I guess you'd say treading water a lot when it comes to the way that we're interacting with the world. But the more we're stressed we become, the less we have an opportunity to focus on the things we really want to do in life. And, you know, as the old saying goes, wherever the mind goes, the attention flows. And the more we begin to focus on the things that are stressful to us in our life or causing stress in our life, the less we have an opportunity to focus on where we're going. And I call that, you know, rear view driving. It's the same as if you were driving your car and all you have an opportunity to do is look in your rear view mirror to see where you've been, because that's where most stress comes from the past, thinking about things that have happened to us, and then we project them into the future.
Mm-hmm.
So we never really have a chance to actually see where we're going. We just project the past into the future in the present, and that creates that sense of stressfulness for us. So ultimately, it boils down to the fact that we are the only problem we'll ever have, and we're also the only solution. So beginning to understand that stress within ourselves is something that is part of our belief system, it's very important to begin to look at our belief system and determine what's true and what isn't true for us, you know, as far as our life beliefs are concerned. So that's the kind of that's the approach I take when I speak with my clients is to begin to find out about some of what their core beliefs are, some of the things that are affecting them in their life, what they believe about, I don't know, other people, what they believe about themselves, what they believe about their partners, their jobs, their parents, et cetera, all becomes part and parcel of their belief system. And as a result, it's those very beliefs that cause us to begin to filter the information around us and to determine for us whether it is going to be stressful for us or not. So when we're looking at life, we can look at life in front of us and we see the things happening out there in front of us. And until we begin to bring them through our filters, they're just events.
Mm-hmm.
You know, say we're sitting here and in the studio here and a little mouse crawls out and sits up and, you know, says, hello, how are you? And wiggles its little whiskers at us. And you jump up on your chair and I reach down to pick up the mouse and say, what a cute mouse. Two different reactions, same mouse. The mouse is still a mouse. But it's our beliefs and the things that we've been programmed through our lives to understand is true or not true for ourselves that cause that filter to either give us good or negative information.
And great, you think I'm a wuss, is what you're saying. And you know what? I would have no problem with a mouse. Now, my little white kitten...
Well,
might
I was thinking
really,
of actually me
really
on the chair and you picking up the mouse, but I was trying to be really butch about this, you know. So,
are you screaming?
Well, the mouse isn't here, so I'm okay. But it's actually the vision of that and how we filter that information. Because when we see something and it comes towards us, we then filter it through a belief system pretty well stylized to function and focus on that particular event. It then creates an internal representation for us, how we see it, an internal state, how we feel about it, an internal physiology, how our bodies react to it, and then finally, our behavior.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of like a little communication model that NLP, neurolinguistic programming, teaches us. And it's that very model that we use to help people manage their stress, because once we begin to understand that stress is something that happens through us, not to us, it's our interpretation of what it is dependent upon our past beliefs,
mm-hmm.
that once we can begin to affect the beliefs in a more effective way, then we can begin to help people manage their stress in a far more effective way as well.
Right. I think a lot of our beliefs seem to be unconscious, or we're not consciously trying to be aware of what those beliefs are, because I think a lot of people kind of live life as it's happening to us instead of as it's happening through us.
Well, absolutely. And that's what we're designed to do.
Right.
That's what we human beings are designed to do. I have my secret belief about human beings that we're actually all paranoids, and we're all control freaks. And that actually comes from the past. You know, you sort of go into the past. You go back into the time of the Neolithic man, and there we have these guys living in caves or hanging out of trees or whatever it is. And at nighttime, they're hanging around a fire and looking fearfully out into the jungle where all kinds of noises are happening. And Og comes along and says, hey, guys, let's go down to the river and have a swim. And they're all looking at him going, Og, you got to be crazy. You're going down to the river to have a swim? You're going to get eaten by a saber-toothed tiger. Ah, nuts, you guys worry too much. And, of course, the next morning they find, you know, Og's little, you know, swimming suit there and his foot and a little note from the saber-toothed tiger. And I believe that all of those people, you see, over the years were actually wiped out. You know, their genetic predisposition taken entirely out of the race. The rest of us left over have these natural inborn fears and phobias that are part of our need to be aware and to be constantly at a high level of attention to the world around us. Now, some of that, when we're really looking at it, okay, is just part of our natural human beingness. You know, we're naturally wary of strangers or new situations or things of that nature. But when you begin to look out into the world around us and see the way that things are organized now, the way that our news media is organized, God love them all, and the way that information is given to us in very specific ways and in very specific doses. And the information, whether it's true or not, is always sensational, always to create eye candy for us and an emotional reactive state within. when we wake up in the morning and turn the news on, we see somebody getting blown up in Iraq, or we see somebody getting shot in Washington, or we see somebody being attacked by a Bengal tiger in a zoo in Bechuana land. They put all of this visual
sensationalized
exactly onto the screen for us. And the interesting thing that we discovered is the fact that when we look at things, when we humans look at things around us, we cannot differentiate between something that's happening to us or something that we're just watching. Many years ago, they did a number of tests by hooking people up to biofeedback machines and letting them watch movies. And what they noted was that during the exciting parts of the movie, during the sad parts of the movie, the biofeedback from the person was identical to the actual events that were happening on the movie screen, as if it was happening to them. So it's obvious that we're a monkey-see-monkey-do creation, and when we see it, we respond to it, and we have some kind of a reaction to it. Well, in our media today, I mean, we see, in the average week, I forget how many hundreds of people we see killed on TV shows, never mind on television and on the actual news. After a while, what happens is that we begin to build up a resistance to this carnage, and we begin to become, well, some people would say non-responsive. But it's kind of like a cyst building up around, you know, like a splinter in your finger, you know? The splinter's still in there, but the cyst just gets hard and bumpy until you cut it out and cut the cyst open, and there's the splinter right in the middle of it. That's kind of what has happened to us a lot with the information, the visual input that we're getting from the world around us in so many ways. And what's really interesting is that most of the stuff that we're seeing that's coming at us isn't even happening in our own backyard or our own country. It's happening on the other side of the world. And just because it's so immediate, we don't differentiate in our emotional body that it's happening over there. What we think about in our conscious mind is it's happening, and we're sensing it and experiencing it and feeling the pain and the anxiety and the fear right in that very moment. Is that stressful? You betcha. You know, and it's that kind of stress that we're dealing with on a day-to-day basis. Ever since 9/11, for example, in the United States, think of this. These two huge buildings caved in, and I know there's all kinds of questions about whether it was a conspiracy, whether it wasn't. Whatever it created an iconic episode in the cosmic consciousness of the people of the world. 3,000 people disappeared in the blink of an eye, in a thundering cloud of filth and destruction, and fire and horror, and we watched it over and over and over again. So were we traumatized by it? You bet we were. On top of that, you will be able to show that to people today, and they will still be able to respond to it as if it just happened.
Yeah.
Because it brings that into focus for us. That's called the gestalt. It's created a gestalt of fear. Now, since that time in the United States, they've become involved in the red light, green light, orange light, amber light, you know, let's light up fear system that's created for them. Today's an amber day. Today's a red day. In other words, keeping people constantly on edge. And when we keep people constantly on edge on an ongoing basis, it creates a certain underlying sense of anxiety, a low-key form of trauma. And when people are traumatized, it's really, really easy to get them to do what we want them to do. Anyone who's ever been at the scene of an accident and has helped accident victims, it doesn't make any difference if you're dealing with a nuclear scientist or some 5-year-old kid. When you bring somebody out of a car accident and they're traumatized, they'll do whatever you ask them to do. Here, sit over here. Here, wrap this around you. Here, drink this. Here, lie down. Here, I'm going to give you a shot. Whatever you say to that person, they just dully go along with because they're in a traumatic state of consciousness. So when we take this on a much larger scale to those of us who hook into the larger media, we find that by watching a constant stream of this information, and I'm not saying as to whether it's being done on purpose or not, but the fact is that's what's coming across to us. You know, when do we ever see the happy news? You know, the closest we get to the happy news is the naked news, you know, on some strange episode. some strange show on who wants to watch that? That's not even funny, you know. But what it's still showing the same horror. It's still showing the same unfortunate events happening in the world. So that's what we're being stressed by. So you ask whether we're stressed or not. Good Lord, we're stressed without even having to get out of bed in the morning. Then we have to get into the latest stresses, which of course is the economic conditions in the world. We're not only being told about it, many of us are in that position right now as I speak. People who are out there listening, I hope you're all working. But if you're not, I understand the pain you're going through. I went through this kind of pain in the 1980s when the Dome Petroleum collapsed. And I lost a job that was very dear to me at that time and wound up getting very depressed. I didn't have the tools that I have now. As a matter of fact, it was one of those things that led me into learning about these things that I know now. So this has happened before. It's going to be happening again. It's part of an economic cycle in our society, and it's up to us to determine what we're going to do about it. Are we going to be the quote unquote control freak perspective? Control freak being if we can't control it, we're out of control and we're spiraling and we can't make any choices and our lives grind to a halt? Or are we going to take a position where we say, I don't want to be in control. What I really want to do is take charge of what's going on around me. Let me see what's happening. Let's see if I can get a handle on this. Let's see where we can go with whatever's happening in my life today and then begin to get inventive with it. Now, I'm not saying it's that easy to do, but I am saying it's not only possible. Many people are beginning to do it today, and they're doing it, whether they're doing it through self-awareness or through the help of short-term therapy is another matter. But this is really this kind of therapy that's being used today that I'm particularly involved with. My favorite is that I'm dealing with at this moment is Psych K, PSYCH-K.com, for those of you who want to look up the .com there. And this is a process that allows us to begin to balance beliefs, to balance our fears, balance the things that are disturbing us in life, and bring us back into the loop as far as the way that we can begin to deal with life in a more comprehensive way and in a kinder way, particularly with ourselves. So without getting into all of the aspects of that just now, just to understand that there are many other short-term solutions and psychological solutions. EFT is one that a lot of people use, tapping, where you tap the forehead and on either side of the eye and the chest, and you repeat certain statements, and you hit acupuncture points that apparently, you know, help change things on an unconscious level. Never having done it, but knowing many people who have, I find that fascinating. They say they have great results with that. Mm-hmm. So there are many different things that we can do to begin to address these stresses around us. But it's also important to realize that they're not going to be decreasing. The world that we're living in at this moment in time is one of increasing stress. We're being given more and more information or quote-unquote disinformation about what's happening in the world about us. If it's not about the economy, now it's about swine flu. If it's not about swine flu, it's going to be about a comet that's going to hit the Earth in 2029. If it's not about a comet that's going to hit the Earth, or may not hit Earth, if it doesn't go a specific little slot.
David, are you telling us that there's a comet that's coming for 2029?
Actually, it's an asteroid.
It's an asteroid?
Yeah, it's really coming.
It's really coming?
Yeah, it really is. It's going to pass by, and I believe the fellow I was on K Radio, who came and spoke about it. The man's name slips my mind. He's a very well-known U.S. Scientist, and he's pointed it out. You know, it's spun around once, and if it doesn't come through a specific key, it will hit the Earth, and we'll have kind of an interesting time. But you know, as to whether it's going to happen or not, as to whether either you or I or anyone else will even be alive by then, how are we going to know?
Why wouldn't we be?
Well, 2029, let's see now. That's 20 years from now. I'll be 170, I think, by that time.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
But without trying to be adverse about these kind of things, these are the things that are constantly being given to us. There's conspiracies about reptilian people out there who are slithering around. Now they've had a TV show that's showing, look, they might be there, you know, called V, I don't know. So these things are built up. They're put into the media. I think it boils down to this. I think that we have a propensity as human beings. We like to be frightened, you know. And
well, stress control. I mean, fright controls us. So there's a good reason to create that fear so that the powers that be can have control over us.
Watch out, powers. We're on to you.
Some of us are.
That's it. Well, the fact is that you know, you can look at it in many different ways, you know, but when it boils down to it all, we still have to look at the physiology and psychology of us as human beings. How are we going to deal with these circumstances? How are we going to deal with them? Well, I mean, it's classic right now. We're looking at all of this panic going on about the H1N1 vaccine. Now, you know that I do deep trance readings. Well, the Willow said that that's my channel source. For those of you who have never heard it, check out the archives of Intuitive Soul and listen to some of those recordings. But they said quite frankly that it's nothing to be worried about.
No.
It's a very innocuous flu. The numbers are much lower than other flus that have been through. And the thing to be more careful about is what they're sticking in your arm to help you not get the flu.
I know.
You know, little things like Guillain-Barré syndrome is starting to come up as a regular item in the media again, which is like a nervous condition that affects the central nerve system and in some cases can even lead to death because we lose control of our nervous system. That's really interesting, isn't it, that the cure can actually be more dangerous than the cause.
Right.
The other thing that's interesting when we look at all of these things too is that there's a panic to have these shots. You know?
They created that panic nicely.
Was created. First of all, everyone was told they had to have it. Secondly, they were then told that when they wanted to get it, they couldn't get it anymore.
Yeah.
You know? Oh, geez, you know, we ran out of it. You want to create a demand? Don't have enough, and then make it all available to everybody. So by the time the second wave comes in, everyone's going to want it.
Yeah.
Because the response to it has been very suspicious by a large number of people concerning the effect of the vaccine. Whether it, not being a doctor, if I was, I would be talking in a different way, I suspect. But the fact is that we don't know what's in this stuff. You know, we do, but we don't. You know, we do know that squalene is in it. We do know that Taliban is in it. You know, it might be there too. Tamil flu virus is in there, and I believe these are the things that were given to a large number of the American servicemen who were on their way to the Gulf War back there 10 years ago, 12 years ago, and these guys, many of them, have developed hideous nervous conditions. You know, we're looking at the number of people who have these shots today. We're looking at the number of people who are coming in as autistic children now after they have shots. You know, according to statistics, I think it was, 1 in every 100,000 people would be born autistic 15 or 20 years ago. Today, it's 1 in every 136.
Wow.
So, you know, this is the figures that I was reading from the AMA, and I'm thinking to myself, oh, isn't that interesting? That's quite an increase. And, of course, the same companies that have been telling us that these are safe to have, you know, are, you know, I mean, can we believe them? Remember the cigarette companies? Oh, they're okay to smoke. You know, doctors and dentists say it's okay, you know. And, of course, you know. People who produced those tasers, who did all their own research, you know, said they were perfectly safe until people started becoming dead.
Yeah.
You know? So what do we got going with that? And then I get a little suspicious about the people who are producing the items, who have already got a free ticket out of it. They have contracts signed with all the governments that buy it, that they can't be prosecuted in case something bad happens to the people. So it's kind of like, oh, and on top of that, today in the news, we're told again that that the price of the original shots have doubled since the last one, ever since the shortage went up. So now it's going to cost in Canada alone well over $1 billion that we're going to be paying out to the drug companies to pay for these inoculations.
Wow.
And you know, it goes on and on and on, and no wonder we get fearful and we get paranoid. No wonder we are under such a high degree of stress in the world around us. We are given so much information that provides us with some of its disinformation, some of it's true, but the bottom line is, what are we going to do with that information? How are we going to live sensibly with it? How are we not going to turn into lemming-like thinkers that simply will go along with whatever the latest and greatest bit of information that comes spewing out of the media towards us is all about? How are we going to deal with that? You know, and most of us don't know what to do with it. We really don't. Again, going back to the flu. One day, a 16-year-old kid dies. The next day, all 16-year-old kids should be injected. The mm-hmm. next day, a little bit of information comes in. There was an underlying medical condition.
Yeah.
And then an old couple die. Quite the opposite of the target group, which was supposed to be like healthy young women and pregnant women.
Really?
I mean, who better to inject with something that's unknown? Or that may cause autism than these kids. Kids, I call them kids, but young people, you know? It's an opinion, but it's not just an opinion. There's too much information that's been provided to us about the medical, underlying medical problems that are coming from the ingredients in these vaccines. So if anyone's out there, go and check out a number of websites. One of my favorites is Dr. Mercola's website, Mercola.com, he's an osteopath who sells vitamins on the internet, but he has a highly informative website, not geared towards panic, but geared towards information. Check in to his website about some of some of this information, and you'll have a great opportunity to have a deeper understanding of some of the medical underlying medical opinions around this. Incidentally, I have a client of mine who will remain unmentioned, who has been working for a drug company for years. And when I asked this person whether they would be getting their vaccination, they laughed at me.
Right.
And said, "What would I be doing that for?" You know. So when you hear that from people who work in the industry, you sort of say to yourself, "Gee, you know." So, not that I want to cause any undue panic out there. But the truth of the matter is, we have to deal with looking after our own health and looking after our own family's well-being. And do not allow a larger organization to, like the WHO, to influence you and determine what you are going to do with your children and your children's children's children. Because that's essentially what's being told to us today. So when we begin to understand that and we begin to take charge of ourselves, then we're beginning to remove ourselves from that yoke that's put around our neck by misinformation through the media. So it's up to us. We can check it out. We can go and discover. That's one way to help assuage the feeling of panic and the feeling of stress. The other way to do it to help ourselves, as I said, going back to the original thoughts about different processes and different disciplines, short-term psychological disciplines, they're very powerful for people to be able to invest their time and energy into, and can very quickly balance our thoughts and feelings, especially around fear and especially around how we're dealing with stress.
Right. And, you know, I've actually worked with you on a few occasions to work through some of these. And some of them, are deeper and require a little bit more of the unconscious mind coming involved in it to, mm-hmm. To grasp some of the deeper beliefs that are not necessarily so relevant or not relevant,
obvious,
but obvious. And that's, it's all really, really interesting work. Truly, I know that there's a lot of people that, and I have been one of the people where they say, do we really need to look at a past life to understand where we are now? And sometimes, I believe that everything will come up in this life to deal with. But there are some times when, going into the past and understanding, where we might have picked up a belief from the very beginning that went into our mm-hmm. core and was part of our soul body, that can benefit us. And these are the types of you know, sessions that you hold, mm-hmm. as well as, you know, the psyche, which is a powerful experience. You do need to know, you know, some of the beliefs that you're going through that are limiting you.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we're probably good at figuring a lot of those out ourselves, but, you know, having the guidance of somebody who knows to assist us would, you know, like yourself, is beneficial.
Well, it's not just figuring out the beliefs, Laurie.
No.
It's also learning what to do with them. I mean, it's everybody finishes, you know, with basic psychology and other psychodynamic strategies and processes. You know, you eventually figure out what's at the root of something, often, you know, painfully, by going through past experiences again and re-traumatizing ourselves. But at the end of the day, when we're looking at it, so you know what it is, the therapist knows what it is, and you're both sitting there twiddling your thumbs going, well, that's nice.
Yes.
What are we going to do about it, you know? And it's the doing that's important. That's why I, you know, going back to psyche, going back to neuro-linguistic programming, NLP, going into, EFT, going into a number of different cognitive psychologies and techniques, and core belief engineering, which is another brilliant process, which comes out of BC from the brilliant Ellie Rosell. Our techniques to allow us to begin to communicate with the unconscious mind, to communicate with the things that are stored there. Speaking about our beliefs, all of our beliefs, in fact, are stored. No, I don't. What Laurie's talking about is the microphone in front of my face. It's approximately a half an inch from my mouth. I'm thinking to myself, I wonder if it was Febreze since the last time somebody else used it, but I'm not sure. Anyway, so anyway.
They just had the swine flu, don't worry.
That's all right. Well, that's okay then. Then the thing is that we have to realize that all of our beliefs are held on the unconscious level or subconscious level. All of our emotions are stored on the unconscious level, and all of our memories are kept on the subconscious level. In fact, the unconscious mind or subconscious mind is the parts of the mind that is not focusing in the present, in the immediate thing that's happening around us. So whatever we're not thinking about in that moment is in the unconscious level, which is everything else.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting how we store information and how we learn it and how it's placed in there and how the beliefs in particular act as definitive filters to determine how we're going to actually feel and act and react to what's happening around us. So when we begin to look at that and say, well, how can I change the filters? What can I do about that? That's where psyche comes in. That's where these other disciplines come in, because we begin to look at the filters, not the events that are happening to us. That's not what's causing us to become traumatized. It's how we interpret them.
Right.
That's why I'm saying we've been conditioned, whether purposefully or not, over the last, you know, 9 years or 8 years, you know, since 9/11, to respond in a different way than we ever did before, to respond with fear and to respond with without thinking clearly about the outcomes as to what's going to be happening to us. Many people are running into this. I see them every day in my practice. Mm-hmm. I talk to people just walking around, going shopping or going to social events and listening. And many of us are living in a very fearful emotional state, and we're not quite sure what it is. You know, we're not quite sure about the, you know, the root cause of it. But we do know that we have this continuing feel of dis-ease and uncertainty, you know? So that's the general feeling we get. So we have one big filter that we're dealing with.
Right.
But then we have the individual filters, like talking about the mouse, as I said. We got a mouse filter, right? You got one, I got one. They scare me. You think they're cute little buggers. That's okay. The fact remains is if I wanted to feel the same way as you did, I would have to work on my mouse filter.
Right.
You know, and there are ways to do that, particularly using the psyche process, that within less than 10 minutes, that belief can be balanced around mice. Because my belief is one end of the extreme, and I really want to do is, what I want to do is be neutral about it. So what we want to do is balance our beliefs.
Right.
So whatever belief we hold, as Henry Ford said, whether we believe it's true or false, we're always right, you know. whatever we believe to be true, then we can begin to alter and shift through some very elegant and unique techniques that very quickly allow us to engender a change on a subconscious level where we disengage the conscious mind and proceed directly into redirecting and reprogramming the unconscious mind in specific areas of our beliefs. And when we do attend to them in that way, that change in that one belief will also affect other beliefs that we're holding that were supporting the old belief. Now they'll support the new belief, because all we've done is balance the belief. We haven't thrown the old belief out.
Right.
Okay? So when that happens, it becomes very significant in our lives, because it allows us then to begin to move forward without fear. It allows us to move forward with new ideas, new ideals. Because when a belief becomes balanced, say around a mouse, you know, then no longer bothers me. Now I can go home and I can talk to my kids or my grandchildren who have some pet mice without freaking out every time I see them.
Right.
This is the kind of little things that change. But that then stops them from being influenced by my fear to be fearful of something that doesn't need to be feared.
Right. Okay? So let's give some concrete examples of some of these. Let's look at, you know, some of the things that are more relevant. I mean, not that mice aren't relevant, but so that we can understand how our beliefs would impact. So let's say there's a lot of people that are feeling fearful around money. Money seems to be one of those areas that can create a lot of stress, because it has to do with our basic survival.
Okay. So are we afraid of money? Are we afraid of not having money? Are we afraid of losing money? What are we afraid of when it comes to the money?
Mm-hmm.
The money is not what we're afraid of.
Right.
It's lack of money that we're afraid of. Okay. And when we begin to look at that, we then begin to have to take a realistic view of what's happening to us. Many people who were first affected by the financial situation that or conditions that are still rolling through our society, were okay for the first little while when it happened, but they still had a fear factor engaged around it. I know many people who are working, and they're even more fearful than the people who aren't working, because they're afraid of losing what they have. So how do you help people with beliefs like that? Well, the first thing you have to do is make them feel more confident about themselves, because most people who have that as a problem have difficulty with how they perceive themselves, with a sense of their own self-worth. And it's not just a sense of survival, it's a sense of who they are in relationship to the world around them. And because most of us have been taught to believe that other people are more important than us, and that we're really not as self-reliant as we would like to think we are, then we have that as a basic core belief as to what's true for us. So an issue around money would be a statement that you would be able to balance somebody with around money would be, I always have more money than I'll ever need, or words to that effect. Okay? Now you say, well, how does that help around money if I don't have money? Well, the fact is if you believe you have that, one has to begin to understand how the mind interacts in the world around us. We exist within a matrix of consciousness, where all consciousness that's held on the human level interacts one to the other. And we are kind of like thread in that matrix and that connection. And the more energy we begin to put out through our conscious understanding of who we are, about our thoughts, it begins to have the matrix begin to like move around us. It's almost like a little fist coming around something and grabbing hold of it. So if we project fear into the future, if we project failure into the future, if we project what we don't want into the future, sure enough, we'll get it. There's an old saying, we used to say, you know, imagine your limitations and sure enough, they become yours. So if you begin instead to do the opposite, and it's very hard to do the opposite when you see just the opposite happening to you, you know, well, I have plenty of money. No, I don't. I just lost my job, you know. And I have this. No, I don't. So what we're automatically doing every time we're trying to convince ourselves of it, we're adding a little PS from our paranoid conscious mind, which is looking and saying, no, I don't. No, I don't. No, I don't. And it places us in a position where we begin to lose touch with what we can do. And when that happens, then we begin to really lose ourselves in the circumstances, in this case, the financial circumstances. How to get out of it? First important thing is to begin to appreciate who you are, what you can do. How much do you care about yourself? How much do you love yourself? How much do you see yourself relating to other people in a positive and dynamic way? Well, as the old saying goes, it's hard to, you know, remember your original purpose was to drain the swamp when you're up to your elbows in alligators, you know. It comes true when it comes to dealing with a lot of circumstances like this because we go into overload. Mm. But what we have to do at the very beginning at some point is we have to step back into ourselves and begin to find the inner calm that is us. Okay? And one of the best ways to do it is to begin to have a greater sense of who we are and what our conscious minds are able to produce for us. And when we begin to see that we are more than we believed we were, when we begin to understand that we can do anything that we need to do, that we simply by beginning to see how we can approach life in a different way, then life begins to become more malleable for us and begins to fit together for us. This doesn't mean to say we're just supposed to sit down and mindlessly repeat, you know, like, geez, I feel great today, and expect the world to cave in around us and create the world we want. It requires active participation on our own behalf, too. Mm. If we believe, for example, and we say to ourselves, geez, I'll always have more money than I'll ever need, then you better go out and figure out some way to make that money. Now, if you couldn't make it as somebody working at, I don't know, Best Buy last year, then see if you can get yourself a job at the Brick. Or if you really want something a little different in your life, maybe you could get involved in some type of a multi-level marketing program. Or you could begin to develop your own business. Maybe you would start a little importing business. Go and meet some people who are wholesalers and import, and you can buy from them and begin to sell in alternative marketplaces like flea markets and things of this nature. There's nothing to stop anybody out there from making an honest living for themselves if they are in financial straits. But first of all, they have to have confidence in themselves that they can do it. Most of us become so totally fixated on the idea that we have to work for somebody else or that we have to fall into somebody else's perspective, otherwise we don't hold any worth. We lose out a lot on that. Those of us who become entrepreneurial during these times do remarkably well. I remember reading a story from a Napoleon Hill book called Master Keys to Riches. And in it, he tells the story of this hairdresser whose business was going under. And she had an extra room in the back of her salon. And what she did is she rented it to this older fellow that she knew who was a compounder of makeups and different beauty supply products. So he said, well, I can't pay you for the room, but I can make your shampoos and your conditioners for you and things like that. She supplied the money for the products or for the ingredients. He made them. Well, people loved them so much, the next thing you know, they were buying them from her. Hmm. By the end of the Depression, this happened in 1929 when people were jumping out of windows. By 1933, 4 years later, they had built a factory and were producing and were hiring over 50 people to manufacture these products. So while everybody else went south during that time because they gave up and they didn't think there was anything they could do, these two people created a beauty supply company and a manufacturing company. Hmm. So it's very interesting to note what we do, okay? Mm-hmm. Very interesting to note what we do and how we do it and how inventive the mind is and how strong the human spirit is around it. But all of that still has to be supported by the belief that we can do it. And if we have beliefs in that filter system, in our unconscious mind or subconscious mind that filter that say every time a challenge comes up to us and says, oh, well, here comes the challenge, and our first reaction is, oh, I can't do that, then, you know, sure enough, you can not only not do it, you will never do it.
Mm-hmm.
So part of getting into the flow of things with this is to begin to take a little bit of time to yourself and begin to challenge your beliefs and begin to find somebody who can help you balance them.
Right. And how do we work on our self-esteem? How do we build that so that we can actually start believing in ourselves?
Well, there's a difference between self-esteem and self-worth.
Okay.
Self-esteem is kind of what we think other people think about us. And as I've heard it described by far more than one person, it's like a plague in North America, because most of us base our lives on what we think other people think we should be doing, saying, believing, or wearing at any given time of our day or at any given point in our life. And the more that we depend upon that social exterior vision of who we should be and some ideal that we have to work on or work to be, we never get anywhere, you know? We just become part of the flock. When we look at self-worth, however, on the other hand, what we're looking at is what we actually believe about ourselves, contrary to what we believe other people think about us. When we look at what we believe about ourselves, most of us have terrible feelings of self-worth. We don't really look at ourselves too well.
Too deeply?
No, well, we look at ourselves deeply, but we look at ourselves in the way that we believe that we should be in relationship to who we are. We often create perfectionistic and utopian visions of what a good human being should be, and the feeling that we can never achieve that, you know, becomes part of our life process. So what are we going to do with that? You know, how are we going to handle that? When we begin to have these visions about some perfect way of acting or being or thinking, it just doesn't work. There is no perfect way. Everybody has their own unique way of expressing themselves and viewing the world. So the self-worth issue really comes into play when, and I see it all the time, not just in my practice, but just in life around me. How many people sacrifice themselves for other people who they treat as if they were more worthy than themselves?
Mm.
You know, this is a plague again in our society. Why? Well, we're taught as children that older people are more important than us, that we should listen to what they're saying, that we should respect them, and that if we really want to be happy, we put a smile on someone else's face first. So that's very good, except for the fact that when someone tries to put a smile on our face or does something nice for us, our self-worth issue comes into respect and say, well, I don't know if I deserve that or not, so we reject it. And as a result, we never truly accept the accolades that others are trying to give us, and a lot of them don't accept the ones we're trying to give them. So there's a lot of us kind of walking around with these unrequited gifts that we're giving to other people, and they're just not being used, the gift of caring or saying something nice or complimenting that person. So when it comes to ourselves and determining what our own self-worth is about, it has to do with how we feel about ourselves and how we think about ourselves. And the number one thing I've discovered when people are coming for therapy is the fact that most people don't love themselves.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, most people don't even like themselves. Oh, well, it's okay for someone else, but not for me. You know? So I have a statement that I have virtually everybody who comes to me work with, not that I try to paint everyone with the same brush, but to understand that self-love is the most important thing that we could possibly express for ourselves. Because in doing that, we're reflecting the love of creation itself. If we are a part of creation, therefore, and we love creation and we love the creator or God, we're taught that this is part of a process and it makes sense when we see the beauty in the world around us in so many ways. So if we can love God, and we're a creation of God, now what would stop us from loving ourselves? Like, what, has God suddenly started making junk in your case? I don't think so. You know, you're fine. You know, it's okay to love yourself. So the first statement I like to come up with when people come to see me is, I always love and appreciate myself unconditionally. Always qualifies it right away. That means all the time, forever and ever, and without doubt. And unconditionally, well, you know, it's okay to love our kids unconditionally or a partner unconditionally or even a pet unconditionally. But ourselves, woo-hoo-hoo-hoo, that's a little heavy. So when we balance that particular belief for ourselves, I always love and appreciate myself unconditionally. And I mean, you can repeat this to yourself ad nauseum, and it won't have the same effect as doing a Psyche process with it. It just won't. Because the Psyche process completely sidesteps the conscious mind, which always intervenes with the statement, even though it may have generated the statement itself. Because it always has to challenge it and doubt things as they come towards us. That's its job. So that statement in itself, I always love and appreciate myself unconditionally, gets people moving. It helps them stop the way that they've been treating themselves, which is usually abominably. And it begins to get them, and I always say the same thing to them, begin to treat yourself like your own best friend. You know, you wouldn't talk to your own best friend the way you talk to yourself.
Mm.
Most of us wouldn't anyway. And if we did, then we wouldn't have a best friend or any other for that matter, you know. So we get into a state where we begin to really put ourselves down. If we had that statement as a truth for us, that I always love and appreciate myself unconditionally, and that I always treat myself as if I was my own best friend. Good Lord, how can you go wrong with that?
Mm-hmm.
If you had a best friend who was in the life circumstances you were in, and you had the insight you have into the circumstances for yourself, you would not be recommending that that best friend sit around moping, or beating themselves up, or feeling poorly, or acting hopelessly. You would be very supportive of that person. You would be providing all kinds of suggestions for them, all kinds of ideas. So, as my grandmother used to say, what are you, chop liver? You know, you shouldn't be doing this for yourself? Of course we should. Mm-hmm. And it's when we begin to take the bull by the horns and not by the tail anymore that we begin to make changes in our lives and begin to make that transformation about how we feel about ourselves. It all begins with that sense of self-worth. And the essence of self-worth is self-love. And so many of us have been taught, oh, it's narcissistic. If you love yourself, you know, and you put yourself before other people, that's selfish. Well, frankly, you know, when you're riding on the airplane, they show you the little picture that when the little, you know, if the airplane's starting to have problems and the oxygen masks come down, you don't try and stick one on your kid's face. You put one on yourself first. Then you can help your child,
mm-hmm.
or the person beside you or whoever needs the help. But you can't do it until you help yourself first. And it's kind of the same in life. You are your own oxygen mask, so to speak. You are the person who's there to go out and reach and look after yourself first. Then you can help other people. Then you can love other people without worrying about whether they're going to love you back or treat you nicely or anything else for that matter. You can just do it because you're no longer wondering what's going to come back to you.
Mm-hmm.
What are you going to get for it? It's yeah. just easy to share from the heart because it's simple. It's a way of thinking and being. I always love and appreciate myself unconditionally. When I love myself, I love the world. When I love myself, I love my creator. And when I love myself, I love my partner, and I love my friends, and I love my children and my family. I love everybody. And everything is beautiful. But it's true.
You promised you weren't going to sing, David.
I wasn't singing. I was humming a little bit, and it just snuck out. But the fact is it is, and it becomes beautiful in that way because that's what brings it forward for us. But when we turn around and we look at the world and we look at the information, as I said earlier, that's being given to us wholesale every day, it just becomes more and more difficult to focus on loving ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when we're totally having our conscious minds hijacked by misinformation and disinformation. So it puts us in that place. So begin to think for yourself. That's one of the best ways to release stress. Stop watching the news.
Yeah.
You know, if you, you know, once in a while, you can turn on the radio and go, oh, that's right, click and turn it off again. It's interesting.
Well, turn on the internet radio.
Oh, well, of course. I mean, that's not radio. That's information. That's the truth. You hear about there, folks? The truth. But, you know, the fact is that is what's necessary because it's like going to a buffet. Then you can pick that information. You can listen to it. I mean, some people are going to listen to me and say, "Yeah, the guy's a raving lunatic," and they're probably right because you know that's their view of the world. And other people say, "Ah, he makes sense," and they're probably right because it supports their view of the world. So take it as you want to take it. Believe in what you want to believe, but believe in something. Don't just buy something wholesale because somebody else told you it was real. You know, the old saying, well, of course they're going to believe it. It's on TV, you know?
Yeah.
And watch the old movie called Network some point. You know Network? Mm-hmm. You know, Howard Beale, the mad prophet of the airwaves. And he asks how people are going to believe, and they just tell him, the chairman of the board says, "You're on TV, stupid. Of course they're going to believe you, you know?" And that's exactly the way it works for us. We see somebody like, God bless him, Lloyd Robertson, or it used to be Dan Rather, or Walter Cronkite. That shows you my age. But these people who come on to tell us the news, we have a tendency to believe them. They have this air of truth about them. Whether the information is right or wrong, we never take the chance to differentiate between it. So, you know, it's that kind of thought pattern that comes into mind when we begin to say, well, why are we watching the news when it's really not affecting us directly in our day-to-day life? I mean, yes, people got hurt in Afghanistan, or somebody died in Iraq, or, you know, a school bus went flying over a cliff somewhere in northern India. But how does that affect us in what we're doing today? If we never hear about it, we never react to it. If we don't know about it, then we can feel more peaceful in our heart and live our own life. Just over 100 years ago, people lived a more rural existence than we do today. Mm-hmm. Cities were novelties. They weren't the mean of living. Most people lived in the countryside. I think over 80% of the people lived in the country. Now, less than 30% do, and the rest of us live jammed together in cities. So we're automatically in a more stressed area. I remember when I was a kid, when they opened the Ontario Land Centre and they had the rat display. Do you remember that? Did you ever hear about the resting? They started off with these little pods and plastic containers and with plastic tubes running between them where the rats lived, right? And they would propagate and there would be more of them. And they had a great life. There was lots of food for everybody and everyone lived well. And then, of course, they kept multiplying and, you know, they kept putting the same amount of food in, and after a while they began attacking each other and literally mugging each other for food. Mothers would eat their children. Rats were going into psychotic states. They had to close the whole thing down because it was becoming a horror story. Kids were like looking at it, and it was a terrifying process to work. So are we any different in the large cities we're creating for ourselves today? Not really. We need the space around us as human beings. As I say, 100 years ago when we were more agrarian, we were more rural, most people never went any further than, like, you know, 100 kilometers from where they were born.
Yeah.
You know? Now we can see what's happening on the other side of the globe by turning the TV on in the morning and going, oh my God, look what just happened in India. Well, you know, it's that kind of thing that again, makes the globe a smaller place, and everyone talks about, you know, oh, what a small world it is. But at the same time, it's the thing that also traumatizes us because, you know, there's always going to be something in the world that's not so good happening.
Mm-hmm.
And the more that we focus on that, the less we have a chance to focus on ourselves, our own lives, and our own sense of inner peace.
Right.
And really, that's what this is all about, isn't it? This is to try and find, you know, peace from these boogeymen that we have chasing us through our lives, these senses of stress.
Well, David, as always, it's been a great pleasure. I know you're coming back in January 14th, and we're going to do a New Year's message.
Whether you like it or not.
Yes. Oh, yes. Well, I think we do like it.
Of course.
And do you have anything coming up that you'd like to tell people about?
Well, I'm actually planning on putting together a channeling workshop, which will be up just in the Orangeville area, probably early in the new year. I'm looking right now at a time in February, and hopefully with a couple of weekends, one weekend to clear people of their limiting beliefs that they can't channel, and the other weekend to really help them get into the process of learning how to channel. But we'll have more information. We get back together in January for that. And anybody who's interested, they can always give me a call, 416-899-3600, or go to my website, which is always behind the time. So I'll try and get it updated again. But that's www.askthewillows.com. And that's great.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, you know, you gave a lot of information. And as I said, I have been firsthand experience of some of this, and I know it works. And I, you know, encourage people to get in touch with you to help them work with these.
Yes, I do work in Toronto as well as Orangeville on a regular basis. So give me a call at that number, 416-899-3600.
All right. So we have a show coming up with an author, and we will talk to you next week.